Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Good morning and welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker. And in the show today, we've got a special treat and a topic that I think is very applicable to a lot of business owners and executives out there, not only for themselves, but also for the next generation. So I'm excited to get to our three guests. Biz Rocket Radio is a show that uncovers experiences, challenges, and opportunities that executives and business owners have had in their lifetime, and gives a chance for us, the listeners, to learn from those experiences and hopefully better our opportunities. So our first guest today is Rick Crane, and Rick is a master certified coach and trainer with Breakthrough Business Solutions. I've actually known Rick for several years, and we finally got him on the show. So welcome in, Rick.
Oh, thank you. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great. So, Rick, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? You know, the show today is centered around athletes turned into successful business owners or successful in corporate America or in their own life, and some of the things that they've learned from athletics at an early age. And you've had kind of a unique experience because you've been coaching so many of these successful people to kind of find out a little bit about these people and identify some of those characteristics. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, first of all, John, I come from a family of sports addicts. My dad's two brothers played for the St. Louis Cardinals, so that's always been in my blood. Now, I wasn't as a natural athlete as they were, but I will tell you that I don't want to give away my age. However, my uncle got the only hit off of Red Ruffing with the Yankees to beat them 1-0, and my dad and their two brothers have played against Dizzy Dean and other types of great baseball players. So it was just great growing up in a lifestyle where they would sit back and tell stories, especially the ones about umpires that actually carried guns. So from there, I just naturally grew up in a family where I was interested in playing the major top three sports, baseball, basketball, and football, with an emphasis on basketball in my high school days. And then a few letters of intent to colleges. I'm the youngest of three sons, so I pretty much had to work my way through life because the money ran out by the time it got to me.
That's right.
So I kind of tried to keep as much participation in sports as I could while working my way through college and getting my career started in business or as an employee. So from there, I joined a large financial company, the largest in the world, and I was with them for 32 years. Well, during that time...
You're not giving away age at all, but you're in good shape there.
During that time, I played competitive sports. I played semi-pro sports, mostly in the fast-pitch softball and the basketball arena. I played against Chris Mullen and his brothers. Let me tell you, those kids from Brooklyn are tough. But really what happened is when you live a corporate life and you start getting into management, I started seeking, my kids started getting a little bit older, so I wanted to get more involved with the kids. And I seeked recognition and appreciation outside of the corporate environment, which you don't always get, right? And so I started coaching kids, and I started umpiring and refereeing, and I became the feeder system. In fact, I am the founder of the basketball feeder system for Hightstown High School back in New Jersey. And I worked with the coaches and developed the kids. And, you know, there's only a certain amount of time that coaches are allowed to be with their kids during the year. So I was that off-season type of coach that nobody knew about. And so what I'd like to share today is the perspective from the athletic point of view into business and what that meant, and from the even the umpiring and refereeing and the coaching perspective, because they all three round out the total person when you're in business.
Now, tell us a little bit about your business. What is exactly that you're doing?
Well, what I do is I'm a leadership and development coach for executives and teams and corporations. And also, I coach small businesses to grow their business and to create a business that works without them.
Okay. And your typical client would be a business, an owner, or somebody who's like a corporate exec?
And that's kind of what makes me a little bit unique, because I started out as a business coach and I'm still a business coach. So I work with small businesses, small to medium sized businesses, to evaluate their business, where they are now, their current state, where their vision is for the future, and then create a plan to fill that gap from where their self-discipline lies and their ends and their full potential lies.
And we're going to do today's show a little bit differently than past shows, because we're going to do kind of a quick introduction with everybody, and then I'm going to do some general questions. But just as a continuation on a thought that you had before, what do you see as being things that have helped people going through that athletic experience and then going on into their life in the future?
Well, one thing that at one point in my career, I was a manager on hold for 9 years. And when I started coaching and really stepping back from being the individual, the doer, the person who steamrolls their ideas through the organization, and really learned how to put people in their roles where their strengths lie. And not everybody's a cleanup hitter. Not everybody's a leadoff hitter. Not everybody's a running back. Not everybody's a quarterback. And really looking at creating teams where having the right people on the bus in the right seats, really my career started to take off after that. So some of the important things that I have found that helped me translate my involvement in sports directly to business is taking teams and people to higher performance, because sports is all about performance and business is about performance. So it's really getting people, setting those expectations and getting people to perform. Having people to have a voice. One thing about umpiring and refereeing is that you have a voice in the way that in deciding on the rules of the game. There are rules of the game in corporations. Well, referees and umpires, that's what they do. They enforce the rules of the game, or else you have chaos. So learning that perspective, one of the hardest things going from an employee to a leader or a management team person is enforcing policy and procedures. We all build friends, and we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. So that's a very important part. Understanding our strengths. Understanding the strengths of your teammates so that they can invest a large portion of their day in their strength zone rather than in things that they are not good at or don't want to do. So, and managing to the weaknesses, okay? Not necessarily trying to get weak people to be strong, but just managing those weaknesses and playing on their strengths and putting them in roles where you know that they're going to succeed. And in sports and being an athlete, we make a lot of mistakes. So mistakes are good. Failure is good. Failure is only a step towards success. So when people understand, get over your fear, get out of your comfort zone, because athletics definitely teaches us how to do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Rick. That's good stuff. So we're going to get back to you in just a second. I'm going to do an introduction of our second guest is Mike Gilliam. And Mike is the president of Opportunities Through Athletics, and that's incorporated. And we've seen Mike speak at a couple of different events, and wanted to have him on the show. So welcome in.
Thank you very much. Excited to be here.
So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background in athletics and also in business.
Absolutely. Well, I grew up a traditional athlete playing football, basketball, and baseball. Very passionate about football. But as I fast forward and I got to my senior year in high school at about 140 pounds, 5'6", no one was beating down my door saying, bring that strap and body and come play for us.
Right.
So I did something very unique, very strange. I converted to a sport called gymnastics. That's a sport that if you don't start by the age of 3, you're already behind the curve.
Yeah.
Now, I'm 17, and I'm starting that sport. And I started that because I have an older brother who at the age of 16 was a world champion competing in South Africa and Australia. So I had a bird's eye view of what it took to be successful in that sport, but that sport's just torturous. You know, your body's not meant to bend that way. It's painful. It's more failure than success, and it's just a long, long journey. But
so this is a shout out to all the gymnasts out there.
There you go.
Hey, parents, get your kids involved in gymnastics. Right. That's a resounding request there.
Befriend a good doctor. That's all I can tell you. But I realized that if I wanted to have a shot at competing in college, possibly earning a scholarship, that might be my best avenue. But I was not recruited, so I walked on, and I explained to the student athletes I work with, that means that I paid them to do what I got to do. When you're recruited, they pay you, and that's a heck of accomplishment and a heck of a compliment to the individual who earns that scholarship. But I walked on to Kent State University up in Kent, Ohio, known for all the wrong reasons, but a great school nonetheless, and I was humbled my freshman year. You know, until you learn what it takes to be successful, you can talk a great game, but you got to learn how to walk one. And when you get to college, it's full of thoroughbreds. There's no donkeys in college. Everyone's good. They're invited. They're there for a reason. And you have to understand what it takes. So I had an embarrassing moment my freshman year. I had one chance to compete, and it was disastrous. And the interesting thing about that sport is that no matter how hard you work, no matter how hard you train, no matter how much you believe you did well, you're judged.
Right,
you have a judge in each corner who's telling you either you're really good or you're really bad.
Yeah,
and that's a humbling experience, and certainly a carryover into business and life in general. We're all being evaluated constantly, so I was always under the magnifying glass. But that was one of the best experiences. Rick said you have to fail before you can succeed. I really changed my attitude that summer after my freshman year in college. Came back in, never lost a conference championship. Ended up winning a national championship. Still on Division I records.
Wow.
And ended up getting inducted to the Kent State University Hall of Fame with Jack Lambert, Lou Holtz, Thurman Munson, and Ben Curtis, and a guy named Mike Gilliam. And most people don't recognize that name, but the reason I do what I do and the reason I transition this into a successful business career is because I believe there's a lot of Mike Gilliams out there. Their alarm clocks may not have gone off yet. They don't know where the right fit is. They need someone to believe in them and work with them, mentor them, and coach them. And people just need an opportunity, hence our name, Opportunities Through Athletics. And I had an amazing experience in college. But then maybe one of the most exciting things that happened to my life was when you do well, your reputation precedes you. And I was discovered by a group called the Bud Light Daredevils. It was the world's number one halftime act. And they approached me and said, hey, would you be interested in touring professionally? And I started my master's degree, and I thought, travel professionally and get paid? Master's degree. Travel professionally, get paid, master's degree. It was an easy decision.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I hooked up with them and ended up doing 5 world tours. I went to places I couldn't even pronounce. I got paid to do it. An amazing experience. We did a huge special on ESPN, and it was just incredible. You know, here I was, a guy from the Midwest who walked on, who had average talent, but had an above-average work ethic and achieved at a high level and had a chance to go tour the world. And I do believe miracles happen every day. I believe anything's possible. And I think young people today need to have more encouragement, stronger supporting cast around them. And I really believe in young people. And they are the future of our world. You know, they're the ones who are going to carry the torch. And fix things or correct things or continue to enhance things. And we need to build them up and make sure that they have opportunities where they can thrive and really flourish and ultimately do what they were designed to do. And they were here for we're all here for a reason. And sometimes you need people in your life to help point that out and open those doors for you. So I had a great experience professionally. I can't explain to you what it's like to be at sold-out Rupp Arena or the Forum in L.A., where you know, some of the greatest venues in the world. That's dating myself, by the way, as far as age there. And it's the Staples Center now. But, you know, to perform in front of a sold-out arena of you know, raging lunatic basketball fans. And we did a seven-minute show. I'm a 5'7" white guy that made a living dunking basketballs. You know, that's not very common. See, miracles do still happen.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? No, we cheated a little bit. We definitely cheated a little bit. We had many trampolines, but yeah. It was a four-man show that was choreographed, and we flipped and passed the ball and ultimately dunked the basketball from about 15 feet in the air, running headfirst into a metal rim and a glass backboard with two balls below you. We averaged a broken bone every 30 shows.
Jeez.
My left elbow shot out the side of my arm. I have a fractured L5 as I sit here.
Nice.
We couldn't wait to get back, though. It was an amazing experience.
Yeah.
And all these things have just led and opened up doorways and possibilities. And here I am this morning on Biz Rocket Radio.
Tell us a little bit about your business, how you've transitioned all that experience into a successful business.
Well, it's personal with me. I'm very authentic in that, you know, I've actually walked the talk. Having not gotten recruited to competing at a high level, I actually kind of skipped that one piece there. I then coached at the division level for 1 year. So I got on the other side of the fence and got to learn how the recruiting process worked to a degree. And I wish somebody would have sat down and spoke with me when I was 14, 15, or 16 and explained the road ahead. Outside of scriptures, my favorite saying in the entire world is this: to know the road ahead of you, ask those coming back. And, you know, when you're young, you know, you tend to lack wisdom. You don't have the kind of body you want. You lack wealth. And, you know, someone needs to guide and direct them. So I realized there was an opportunity to really assist families, specifically their sons and daughters, in helping them make a successful transition from high school to college. Sadly, our high schools don't teach recruiting class. And when you think of how important sports is in the fabric of our society today, how expensive a college education is, and it's going to continue to escalate, what's at stake? I mean, where you go to college is going to lead to your future career, deeper faith, your future spouse. It's not about the next 4 or 5 years of your life. It's about the next 60 to 80 years of your life. So it's a major life decision with very little feedback, very little input, very little assistance in the general public. So we carved out a niche, and we've been at it now just over 13 years, very quietly, one of the best-kept secrets here in Greater Atlanta. We work with kids all over the world, work with them all over the United States, and we make a difference. And it's really not what we do. We find good kids who want to be successful, and we're able to guide them and direct them and create a menu of choices so that they can control their destiny. Unlike my story, I didn't have options. I walked on, I followed my brother, I had to make it happen there. We want kids to have a menu so they can decide what's right for them so that they can ultimately control their destiny.
So it's not so much coaching them necessarily in athletics, it's coaching them in how do you take the skills in athletics that you have and leverage those into
Correct.
Opportunities at that next level, which is really university is really the name.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, you know, I look at the student-athletes as the Ferraris, and we're kind of the navigational system. You know, they're Ferraris in the making, I should say. They're certainly not Ferraris yet, but a lot of them have that potential. They just need some guidance and some direction. So, you know, I coach in a different capacity. You know, I don't blow a whistle and scream at them. You know, we sit down, and I teach them how to sell themselves. I want them to understand how to be proactive, how to ask for offers, how to playfully decline, how to make a great first impression, not a good one. There's just a lot of life skills that we don't address or touch, and again, in the high school systems. And I'm not knocking the high school systems. I'm all about education. But the reason grown adults struggle is not because they can't conjugate verbs in Spanish. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, how do you have a successful marriage? How do you manage your finances? How do you multitask? How do you accept and take constructive criticism? There's just a lot of things that you learn on the fly, and we don't do too well when we're not prepared. And we end up with some regret in our life and wishing somebody would have taught us. So when I say to know the road ahead of you, ask those coming back, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm coming back, helping those coming up that path, and giving back, you know, the nuggets of knowledge that I was given through my experiences to help them have all the amazing experiences that they're entitled to.
Great. All right. Well, we're going to catch up back with you here in a second.
Thank you.
Mike, that's a great background. So our third guest is Ira Blumenthal. I said that right, Ira, right? I
got you
that
sure
last?
Did.
All right.
Should, good job.
First try. And Ira's the president with Co-Opportunities Incorporated. And Ira's got a long bio that I could barely even get through all the sports and stuff. He's a lax guy from birth. Like, you were born with a lax stick in your hand, weren't you?
Well, you know, it's funny because, as you know, lacrosse is the Native American game, the most American game there is, the all-American game. And, you know, people will turn around and ask, do you have any Native American in your blood? And I say, yeah, a Jewish Indian is a Schmohawk, and it's a special tribe. But, you know, I got to say something. I'm thrilled to be part of this team this morning. I'm listening to both these guys talk about their backgrounds and what they do. And it's, first of all, I do want to say to Rick that you're not the only one here that remembers Red Ruffing. In fact, if you want to trade a Bob Feller for Red Ruffing card, I think we can do that. Okay, I think I have a few extra.
We got a deal going on here. There's no cash.
And then also, with Mike, I've got my youngest son is being recruited by a number of D1 schools right now for basketball, and he can't dunk a ball at 6'3", 6'4". So if you did this 5'7", there might be some enterprise here.
That's right. So tell us a little bit about your background, Ira.
Born in a log cabin, Abe Lincoln and I, we walked to school together.
Yep.
I was raised in the deep south, the south shore of Long Island, New York. And, you know, like everyone else, okay, in my generation, the sport was football. You know, that was the sport. You know, every dad wanted to see their kid, okay, with a jersey on his back and shoulder pads. And I played football and a little bit of lacrosse in high school, all right? And lacrosse was really more under duress. The football coach was the lacrosse coach, and that was a way. We didn't have spring football back in those days, okay, in the 60s and early 70s. So a way for a football coach to keep his kids together was to play lacrosse.
It's
and
like
lacrosse,
Bo Jackson, right? Didn't Bo Jackson do that in Auburn?
Exactly. Same drill.
Okay.
So bottom line is, under duress, I had no interest in playing lacrosse. My dad called it lacrosse, had a space between the L.A. and the C.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, football. You know, in those days, if a coach said to cut your hair, you cut your hair. You know, if you complain to your parents would say, listen to the coach. You know, today we'll go to lawyers. You know, we'll sue. They're infringing upon our rights. So long story short, my coach, ironically enough, a guy named Roy Kesnick, okay, also my football coach, who passed on a few years ago, every time I pick up or every time I turn the TV on and see ESPN2, it's interesting, one of his sons, Kesnick, you know, Quint Kesnick, is actually the commentator. And, of course, I remember these kids when they were three-year-old ball boys, so I'm really feeling pretty old. But so anyway, I picked up a lacrosse stick, was recruited for football throughout high school, had a very, very good opportunity to go to Oklahoma under a guy named Bud Wilkinson, you may remember that name. And unfortunately, at the beginning of my football season, my senior year, tore my cartilage. And cartilages in those days weren't operated. They were put into cylinder casts, okay? And it was interesting. I had a handful of offers, Temple University and a few other places as well as Oklahoma. And very quickly, the coaches were disinterested. And very quickly, the coaches said, great, why don't you walk on? And if it works out, we'll give you a scholarship. But they weren't going to invest money in damaged goods.
Right.
You know, and I got a couple of phone calls from, you know, a couple of schools for lacrosse. But I never wanted to be a lacrosse player in college. You know, it was football. So long story short, I did have a school up in Boston named Northeastern University that decided they would honor, you know, their invitation. I went up there to play football and talk about some bad luck. First game of the season. Now, you got to remember, first game of the season was freshman, because in those days, freshmen couldn't play varsity. I broke my collarbone. So, you know, collarbone was healed by the end of the winter, and the next thing you know, I had a lacrosse stick in my hand, and it was time to transfer. So transferred to a little school in College Park, Maryland. You know, there's nothing fiercer than a fighting turtle.
The turtles, the terrapins, the fighting, fearsome terrapins.
And in those days, it was a five-horse game in the world of lacrosse. It was Maryland, Hopkins, Navy, Army, occasionally Cornell or Syracuse, occasionally, you know, UVA. But it was you know, and our big rival in College Park, Maryland was, in fact, I still have, this may sound a little absurd, but our coach gave us panties to give to our girlfriends. And on the panty, it said, Sink Canoe U, which was the Naval Academy. And that was our big rival.
All right.
That's too much information.
No, that's okay. That's fine. Just okay. In the fringe.
Okay, in the fringe.
Just on the fringe, just so you know where the guidelines are.
Well, and just to tell
you, all the stuff at the beginning. You know, you got to, don't listen to this, don't act on that. So all that applies to the panties. And
well, but you know, the bad news is that I didn't have a girlfriend then, so I still have the panties. So it's really very sad. But so long story short, I was blessed to be on a national championship team. Okay, in 1967. We did not have the NCAA in lacrosse then and many sports. So it was coaches poll. We beat Johns Hopkins. Johns Hopkins beats Navy, and Navy beat us. And they were huge seasons, 9 games. You know, things have changed.
Long seasons. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, we went back to wooden sticks, obviously, in those days. And we'd have a whopping large crowd of 1,200 people, okay, for a national championship game. The game has changed dramatically, and I'm thrilled about it. Well, what happened was, very briefly, I had a stint at basic training in the Army Reserve. That was a time where Army Reserve was a good place to be, okay, with, you know, war across the pond. And came back, finished my education at a little school called Towson State College. Now, well, it went from Towson State College to Towson State University to Towson
right,
University.
Baltimore, right?
Yeah, exactly, sure. Exactly. And one day it'll probably be TU, and then one day T, and then T. Okay. But now it's Towson. And in those days, freshmen couldn't play varsity, and I took a role of being head freshman football and head freshman lacrosse coach at Towson. Concurrently, in the summers, okay, I went up to Canada because I was going to seek my fortune playing professional lacrosse, which only existed in Canada. Lived in Peterborough, Ontario, with 6 guys in a one-bedroom room, and we got a lot of money. We played for $40 a game.
Nice.
And dental assistance when we needed it.
It's Canada, you get that automatically.
Well, you know, you're right. And what's interesting is it's the Canadian national sport. So those hockey lovers out there, you might assume that hockey is the national sport of Canada. To this day, it's not. It's lacrosse.
Yeah.
And long story short, we played box lacrosse, which is indoor lacrosse, you know, different game. Came back. There was a new league forming, first professional league in the United States in 1974. Played for the Rochester Griffins for a very little while. They moved to Long Island, became the Long Island Tomahawks. It was an indoor lacrosse league that was primarily Canadians. Every team had to have it by mandate, 2 Americans, because we played in the U.S. was blessed with that, and then continued coaching, and then one day someone asked me, what do you earn for a living being a head freshman football and lacrosse coach? And, and I gave him the number. It might have been like $8,000 a year.
Yeah.
And he said to me, how would you like to earn $17,000 a year and get a Chevy Impala?
Ooh. Did it have spinners?
In those days, there were no spinners. The spinners we put on our wheels and our bicycle. But, so long story short, went into the business world, but had the bug of being an athlete and being a coach in my bloodstream, and I'm proud to say that nearly 40 years later, I'm still a coach. Different level, though, and this may be segue into what I do. We had a strategic, and I'd been with companies like Sara Lee and others over the years, and we're chief marketing executives and so forth. When I built my consulting company, I tried to ask my team, what do we stand for? What do we do? And when you're a consultant and you're an educator, and I'm affiliated with a number of universities, and you're a public speaker, and you're an author, in the end, you're a coach. That's all you're doing. So the reality is I may wear a shirt and tie many days of the week, but I'm still wearing a whistle around my neck with a clipboard in my hand, and it's still about X's and O's. And I've taken the learning, which is what this session is about, the learning from being an athlete, from being a coach, and I also played on a U.S. World Cup team that won the World Championship, but taking it and applying it, the principles and the precepts and the strategies and the tactics and the philosophies of athletic, okay, to a different field. And the playing field is called private enterprise or public enterprise. So thrilled to be here, thrilled to be a part of this team here, and I'll play whatever role I need to play, whether it's boxing out or shooting or just pushing the starters.
So tell us a little bit more about your company. Who do you mainly work with? What types of groups do you tend to attract?
Well, in life and in business, if you have a choice of being good or being lucky, take lucky.
Lucky
okay.
works.
Yeah, well, lucky yeah. works, okay. You know, I was blessed and fortunate after my career in the food industry to align with a little company based right here in Atlanta called Coca-Cola. You've probably heard of them, okay. 125 years old about a month ago. And started the consulting practice a little over 20 years ago, and I'm proud to say that the company I founded is the longest-running, continuously retained consultant in the history of Coca-Cola, just about 20 years. And, you know, the name of the company is Co-Opportunities. And the two things that we really focus on, number one is strategic alliances. How do we build synergies, symbiotic relationships, collaboration, partnering, adventures, joint ventures, whatever the case may be, taking two organizations and figuring out whether they're similar, dissimilar, even competitors, and how do they work together for common good? And the second is I'm a branding guy. You know, I'm a branding considered a branding expert, which is exciting to hear. I've been called a lot of names. Expert is good. So that's what we do. And we've worked with everyone from McDonald's to Burger King to Harrah's Casinos to American Airlines to Nestle to Walmart to supermarkets, to you name it, with the idea of building alliances, helping them build partnerships, and also extending their brand reach. And I'm living the dream. I'm having a great time. And every day is a game for me. And at the end of the day, you look up at the scoreboard because it's all about how you finish. And so Coach B forever. I even have employees that still call me Coach, even though they never wore a pair of cleats under my leadership.
Yeah, great stuff. Well, this is awesome. Great start to today's session. So the question that I've got for the group, and maybe I'll start with Mike. Maybe you could start addressing this, and we just kind of go around. You guys sure. Can comment. How do you transition a successful the experiences that you learn from athletics? How do you transition that successfully into real life?
Well, you know, life is a process. And I firmly believe that sports is a microcosm of life. Everything you do as an athlete is transferable. And I often challenge the young adults I work with. I ask them, what if you approached every avenue of life like you do your sport? What if you, you know, worked as hard, had the discipline, had the vision, the goal setting, made all the necessary adjustments to be successful on every avenue of your life, whether it be your homework, your SAT prep work, your faith, your career, your relationships, your communication skills. Because truly, when you look at sports, I mean, you take constructive criticism. You don't always win. You have to have discipline. You have to learn how to compete. You have to overcome injuries. You have to persevere. And that is life. I mean, you know, ultimately, this is about winning the game of life. You know, sports is a vehicle that teaches how to prepare. But sadly, a lot of athletes leave that great mentality back in the arena on the field. They don't bring it with them to the real world or to their careers or to their relationships or to other avenues of their life. But I challenge them. I say, just imagine how successful you'd be if, you know, you applied your same mentality as an athlete to every avenue of life you set your feet on. What I've done personally, I mean, it's attention to detail. You know, our sport was about perfection. I mean, no matter how good you did, you weren't perfect. And that's truly how life is. No one will ever be perfect. There's only one. So the reality is you have to realize it's a constant journey. It's a constant climb. And, you know, I firmly believe that it starts at home, you know, developing excellence in the house. I mean, this may sound incredibly trivial and trite, but I encourage kids first thing every day, make your bed. You want to be great in life, not good, make your bed. There's something to be said about having an accomplishment, getting a result, being in charge, being in control. I mean, this is how successful business people operate. They know how to get things done. They know how to take care of the little things. They know how to delegate, and they're in charge. They've learned how to multitask. There's just so many great things through sports that you bring with you to a successful business career, and you bring it all. You know, I think everything that I've ever done, I really can look back. It really wasn't the big accomplishments, but it was the attention to detail. And I firmly believe that that's what it takes to be successful in business.
Anyone else?
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
Is that okay, Rick?
You go.
Okay, and I'm going to move on this very fast because I know we have there's always a time limitation.
We're in good shape.
Okay. You know, I love what I'm taking notes as Mike is talking here, so this is worth the price of admission for me just to listen to his insight. The key to life, okay, is not what you heard and not what you've seen. The key to life is what you learn from it, you know. And as one who does a lot of public speaking, I'll tell an audience, you know, it's really not what you heard today. It's not the funny joke. It's not the metaphor. It's not the example. It's what you do about it Monday morning, 9 a.m. And, you know, what sport does is, it is a microcosm. It does teach you so many things. And I jotted down 8 things I want to just share very quickly, okay, things that I've learned along the way. And I will tell you that you learn from others. You may learn from your own mistakes. And I'm going to drop a name or two, but I think they're important. I have a friendship with a guy named Tommy Lasorda, who your audience should think about right now, that next month Tommy will have been with the Dodgers for 60 years.
Wow.
Talk about, you know, work ethic. Talk about commitment.
Yeah.
You know, was drafted at Norristown, Pennsylvania, played baseball in Cuba, and it's all said and done. But, you know, Lasorda, in our friendship, I was coaching a youth team at East Cobb, and I was looking for some way to motivate them before a USSSA championship. And he said to me, why don't you do what I did with the Dodgers? In the World Series, Tommy Lasorda had the equipment manager rip the names off the back of the shirts of all his players. And they came to the locker room, and there was no names, you know. And he said something that is a great learning for me from sport. And I'm going to give you 8 of these very quickly. The first one was, he said to his team, you play for the name on the front of the shirt, not the name on the back of the shirt. So one of the lessons in life, and whether it's on a sports team or whether it's a sales team at Coca-Cola or Nestle or, you know, insurance, this is about team. And if you're playing a team sport, it's not about the name on the back of the shirt. New York Yankees are one of the few teams in Major League Baseball that doesn't have a name there for that reason. I was an incoming freshman at the University of Maryland, and sadly my head lacrosse coach passed away about 3 years ago, John Hezzy Howard. And he had all the incoming freshmen at Maryland bring the best article from their high school career because he wanted to publicize the crop of athletes coming into Maryland. We were going to be national champs, which we were. And I was excited, and I got this article about myself from Newsday. Man, I was full of ego, and I gave the coach my article along with the other stupid freshmen, and he took the article and my article and the other articles and put it in a metal can, lit a match, and it burned. And he said, gentlemen, your history means nothing. Now get your rear ends out on the field. Great learning.
Great,
but it's athletic learning, but it's also learning in life. Hey, what a great quarter, man. We sold the heck out of our product. Well, guess what? Monday is the new quarter, you know. But motivation, very quickly. Jack Llewellyn, a sports psychologist, buddy of mine, okay, we were once talking about motivation. And he said if a coach or a sales manager has to spend time motivating his people, he hired the wrong people. Mm-hmm. They need to come to work already motivated. Teach them about, you know. So another interesting learning from, and I'm almost there, halfway there.
I want you to stop there because that's a really good point.
Yeah.
And this is going to take a little bit of an aside.
Yeah.
Motivation. How important is it to hire people in business, to work with people in business that have had that motivation entrenched in them from the beginning? And what does sports allow you to do with that? Rick?
Well, in business, especially in larger businesses, one of the things that sports allows you to do with that is called emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence is about knowing yourself, being aware of the things that you do that affect others. So I think that being an athlete, being a coach, even being in the umpiring and refereeing side of the business, that when you bring that self-confidence, that optimism, that self-awareness and self-management and discipline with you into business, that it permeates throughout your team. So some people, you know, you talk about that magnetic force within a business. Not everybody has it. You know, leader, I'll just tell you right now, there's two words that I want you to remember about leadership. Leadership sucks. Okay, you go out there every day and, you know, there's no thanks for it. It's a tough job, okay, when you're at the top. And the same goes with coaching. You know, that who wants to be a leader all the time? Sometimes you just want to step back and say, hey, somebody take care of me for a while, okay? So I think that successful athletes and coaches bring that leadership style into organizations that permeate throughout the organization where people say and are inspired and enrolled by the actions of that leader.
And Ira, you had mentioned that in terms of the motivation piece. What do you see in terms of sports that is it born or bred?
You know, that's interesting. I think it may be born and bred, you know.
But born inbred?
No. This is a family show. But I go back to, as I said, you know, when you're through learning, you're through. And there's not a day in my life where I don't learn something. And I remember sitting with, as I said, Dr. Jack Llewellyn, good guy, great guy, who's a sports psychologist. He's about the, not outer space scientist, inner space, between the ears.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he made an interesting statement that I hadn't thought about. If you spend most of your time having to motivate your sales force or your team, you picked the wrong team and the wrong sales force. Those kids need to come to that field, right? Those sales reps need to come to their office already motivated. Now, you can take them to a higher level, maybe do a fevered pitch, but the job of a coach is to teach, all right, and to show them the finer points of the game and to educate. So, you know, I moved away from, and when I was a coach, man, I used, you know, put blue lights in the locker room, had soft music before a game, and 3 minutes before they went out there, had John Philip Sousa, bum, 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 you know, did everything possible, okay? I mean, I had a team that was playing very poorly, a freshman team at Towson, first half against a team they should have done well with. And I came into the locker room. I had my manager pull out their practice jerseys. I told them, take off your game shirts. You don't deserve to wear the shirt of Towson Tigers. Mm-hmm. You're going to play the rest of the game in your game, in your practice shirts, tattered and torn, embarrassing to the stands. And the but I got to the point that when I thought about it, I was spending more time motivating and less time really teaching. So my answer is, yeah, I think somewhere along the line, be it your mom, your dad, your mentor, your priest, your rabbi, you know, your teacher, and what you've seen and read, there's got to be some of that internal. But it's also about, I mean, you know, and I'm not going to try to, you know, give you the song and dance about my youngest son, Ryan. He's a 17-year-old who gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning, okay, even now without school, and goes down to the Y and gets up 500 shots a day, all right? And then what happens is then he goes to a trainer, all right, a guy named Buddy Primintown who's working on his core, okay? And then he has practice in the afternoon, and then he'll go out in the driveway and shoot. Don't have to ask him to do that.
Yeah.
But he has see, motivation is directly correlative to defining success. What's end game? Do I want to play D1 ball, or do I want to be a high school player, or do I just want to score another basket? So my long-winded diatribe on motivation is get a kid who's already motivated with average skills and you'll make him a great athlete, or you make him a great salesperson.
Yeah.
If I can add to that, I think it's an interesting concept to think about, in that if you talk about football, if the running back fumbles the ball, and the other 10 guys on the team, you know, realize there's a fumble, in a heartbeat, without being asked or provoked, I mean, they're going to jump on that ball because it's a team, it's for the team, it's the right thing to do. If they don't cover the ball, they're going to be benched, they're going to be pulled out. I mean, you don't think about it. You look at the ball going, well, it's not my mistake. I didn't screw up. That's not my mess. But I go back to living at home.
Yeah.
You see, kids wake up every morning. I bet anyone who might be listening to this woke up today and walked by something that was out of place that wasn't theirs, and they left it there. That's not mine. It's not my mess. I don't need to pick that up. But it's interesting how an athlete thinks. They'll do anything they have to for the team to achieve a W. See, if that mentality was prevalent on every avenue of life, and I think it starts at a very young age, I think the most important job, bar none, is parenting. And it's probably the one that's starting to become frayed more than any other job out there. You know, kids are hard work. It's nonstop. And the reality is the job at home really dictates whether they become great employees, great managers, great owners. It's the principles and values they learn at home by just your example or by your words or by your actions. And I really encourage kids at home to be the MVP of their family. And I explain to them that an MVP is not who makes the most money or does the most laundry or cooks the most meals. Very important people, don't get me wrong. But my definition of MVP is someone whose attitude and actions makes everybody else on the team better. And I challenge them. I said, if your family voted for the MVP tonight, would you win? And most of them say no. And I said, there's your goal. I want you to look for opportunities around your house to make a difference. It may not be your stuff, your brother's mess, your sister's mess, but you take the initiative like you were on a football field covering that ball, making sure the team was moving in the right direction to win a national championship. It starts young. It is inbred, not inbred. but I do think these do carry into every arena of life thereafter.
Ira, you had a point.
Yeah, and Mike, that's fascinating stuff. You know, my oldest son played college basketball at Washington College up in Chestertown, Maryland, Division III basketball. And he bemoaned the tragedy of being a junior and playing an average of 30 seconds a game, but he was team captain. Mm. And I tried to explain to him that not playing but being team captain is more important for your resume than being a guy that scores 30.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is huge.
And he's now a junior executive at Coca-Cola, has carried his athletic experience with him, and he did start as a senior. But to me, I told him, of all the things you've done in your young career, the fact that you were respected as a team leader and was not a player, you know, of any kind.
A starter, yeah.
Well, you see, exactly right. Yeah. It is about team. You know, I mean, a quick story about team. And you talked about, you know, roles and role players. I got a good buddy here in Atlanta. Some of your listeners may know of Ovi Mahaley. Ovi is the Falcons fullback, all-pro fullback, block of stone, concrete. Ovi carries the ball for the Falcons an average of 1.2 times a game, all right? But Ovi is very happy to tell you that when Michael Turner – two games in a row, only gained 60 yards, it was because Ovi had an ankle problem and didn't play. And when Ovi came back, Michael Turner ran for 150 mm-hmm. yards. So what it says is you also learn about role.
Right.
You know, whether I'm the receptionist that says it's a great day at CarMax, right, or whether it's the sales guy or the accountant in the back, everyone's got a role to play, and you learn that in sports.
Yeah, but one more thing about that, John, is you guys are exactly right on, because valuing others is really prevalent in what needs to happen, and not just the character of our kids today, but also in business. So when we do wake up in the morning, as Mike stated, you know, what is our outlook on life today? Oh, I wonder if I'm going to make that sale. I wonder who's going to benefit me today. I wonder what good or something is going to happen to make my day today, instead of I wonder who I'm going to affect today. I wonder what value I'm going to bring to others today. What opportunities are for me out there to bring value to other people? I just got back from a leadership camp that we conduct once a year for 4 days down in Americus, Georgia, and we take aspiring juniors from 50 different high schools and bring them together in a leadership environment. We have the Navy SEALs. We have top trainers in the world come in and volunteer their time to help us with the camp. And let me tell you, every year, these kids are some of the top-rated athletes in the state, and it's still they really struggle with the team concept and stepping back and looking at the bigger picture. And there's an easier way to do this if we all help each other. And it's mostly about me, 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 and, you know, getting to that goal directly. So so I think if you always make it about others rather than yourself. Now, this isn't, you know, this is just taking it to business. If we really focus on the value that we bring to other people and the success that we can help other people with, their success instead of our own, that we'll have more than we need in return.
You know, if I may,
yeah, no, go ahead.
You know, Rick, I'm going to give you the MRI. Okay, I'm going to give you the doctor's viewpoint on what you just talked about. The reason why kids today don't get the concept of team is not about the kid; it's about mom and dad. And I will tell you, when I was moving my baseball team to East Cobb, someone had asked me, "What's your definition of a perfect team?" And I said, 13 orphans.
Right.
I said, when I look at the bleachers, I want to see the driver from the orphanage. No parent. Because here's the problem. And I, as a basketball parent, I see it all the time. Mom and dad are telling that kid on the ride home, shoot, shoot. Because the only way you're going to get to become LeBron James, as if that's even possible, is to shoot. So what happens is you will see high school athletes on a fast break drive up the court, a 3-on-1, or a 3-on-2, which they practice every single day, okay, a basketball weave, and he'll look to the left and he'll look to the right, and he'll just drive in and shoot and normally get stuffed, okay? So to me, that also says that success is about coaching, and you learn that in athletics, okay? Yeah, the coach doesn't get credit. Team gets credit when they win the championship. Team loses, coaches get blamed.
Yeah.
Nobody
yeah.
fires the first baseman,
right.
You know? So I think that says one of the things we did learn in athletics is the importance of the coach. There's a reason why Coach K at Duke University every single year is a contender, okay? Oh, he's a great recruiter. Well, maybe he's a great recruiter, but he's also a great coach, you know? So coaching is so important. And parents can be bad coaches.
Another point along those lines is that, you know, I look at teams, they're machines. And by definition, a machine is a group of moving parts designed to make work easier. You know, you look at families, you look at teams, organizations, they're groups of moving parts. They're people that move and have roles and responsibilities. Now, if something breaks down in our car, a true machine, a mechanical machine, we replace the part. You know, we try to fix it first. If we can't, then we have to go buy a new one and replace it. Now, thank goodness families don't operate that way. You know, if we have a broken part in the family, you know, I mean, some of them, yeah, you know, some should be removed, but, you know.
Yeah, Junior is now no longer in our family.
That's right.
He's been removed and replaced,
right.
And here is the new one.
Here's the new one, yeah.
Junior.
All shiny.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting concept in that, you know, the idea that each one has a role and a responsibility and has to understand that, and that takes time. I mean, everyone has unique talents. Everyone has value. I think that's real important to understand. I mean, some people don't believe they're good enough to be successful. Some people don't believe they're entitled to it. You know, your background and circumstances may have influenced who you are, but you are responsible for who you become. That is so important to understand. It doesn't matter where you came from. You know, I have kids often tell me they're not real happy with their parents, and they wish they had better parents, and they wish they did more, and they wish they did this. I remind them very carefully, your parents can only give you what they were given. And some of us don't come from parents who had great parents as well. So they're doing the best they can with what they were fed, and trying to raise a family and do the right thing. And I think coaches are like that. You know, the reason there are great coaches and successful ones, they've had other great coaches who've infused their experiences, their knowledge, and their wisdom and have created another dynamic torch. Those who don't do very well probably didn't have very good of a supporting cast around them. They didn't have great mentors, people who really worked with them and gave back and really wanted them to be successful. It was still about them. You know, so I just think the idea of thinking of a team or a company or organization as a machine, a group of moving parts, helps you to kind of define roles and realize that we all have value and we should be working towards the common goal, and that's just for greatness.
You know, there's a spiritual side to athletes as well. Athletes that believe in something, you know, with the faith, something more than just their physical ability to get the job done. So whatever that is, okay, I can remember a baseball team that I coached on our way to a state title that in the beginning of the season, first practice of the season, there was a rabbit's nest right behind shortstop. And in that rabbit's nest was nine little rabbits. How many players on a baseball team? Mm. So, and there was a runt, okay, and the runt died. And we dedicated our season to that rabbit. And believe it or not, we won the state title. It's having a personal mission. I almost like kids to have a chip on their shoulder, okay? Something that they need to prove, that they need to get that chip off their shoulder and be motivated by. So when you talk about motivation, sometimes we as parents or we as coaches need to create that and need to create it before the start of the season so that these kids are motivated to get to where they need to be through that emotional drivers to get to their goal.
What's the most difficult part that you guys faced transitioning your athletic experiences into, oh my God, this is the same thing as I did when I was in high school or college. It's directly applied to this professional career. What was the hardest thing in making that transition? Besides, you know, not flipping over, you know, baskets and doing back dunks with 15 feet in the air.
Right, for me.
Adrenaline junkie boy over here.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love thrills, absolutely. But I think the idea of going from the physical to the cerebral, I mean, you know, athletically, you know, you have the ability to use your entire body, you know, and really kind of create and you can get faster and you understand how to train and develop certain skills and turning your weaknesses into strengths. And you have more direction and a game plan. When you transition to the business world, it's more about, you know, understanding people and organizations and design. And it's not physical, it's mental. And, you know, I think that was the hardest part for me personally, you know, because I like to be able to control my destiny. You know, when you hire other people, you know, you're kind of at the mercy of their work ethic, you know. And I'll tell you, I am 47. I'm not afraid to tell you, but I'll tell you from my experiences, as I hire scouts that work with me, I'm amazed that when you give somebody the opportunity to be as successful as they desire. My college coach taught me an invaluable lesson. He said, the best you can, Mike, try to get yourself in a situation where you never have a ceiling above your head, you know, in the business world. If you want to be successful, try to never get boxed in. Always be in a situation where there's never a ceiling above your head. And when you find people, and especially sales reps, you know, invaluable people, but you give them the opportunity. There's no limitations. You know, you create a description, you give them a commission, and you just give them a wide open highway to be as successful as they desire. They can control their destiny. You want to make six figures, you want to make 50,000, whatever you want to do, it's in your hands. It's amazing how most of them will not take that opportunity and do something with it. Most people are more driven to work for someone else's approval than for their own desires and goals. I think that's intriguing.
Is it? But do you see that more so in people that have an athletic background, or do you see more people landing in sales roles and leadership roles that have that athletic background?
From my experiences, you know, you would think that the athlete brings the differential edge. You know, they understand how to get the finish line. They're not afraid to roll up their sleeves and get dirty. You know, they understand you don't always win, but you have to persevere. Some of them bring it with them, but not all of them.
And it may not even be athletics, right? It could be arts. It
absolutely
could be anything that you
any
that,
talent
that drives to those characteristics that Ira was talking about. They transcend the activity, right?
Well, a lot of what's going on today, especially in our youth, is that you can't sit down anymore like the old style traditional leader. See, traditional leadership is something I do to you. Interactive leaders are something I do with you. So having the coaching background and being able to bring that into an organization, you know, we've got to dispel the old ways of leadership that we have, and just you think you're going to tell people what they need to do and what they're going to do, and because they need a paycheck, they're going to rise up to the occasion. That's not how you're going to motivate people today. People want to know that they contribute to a much larger cause, or that they feel important, or that they're contributing something to more important than your bottom line. So the way that we manage and lead people today is just slightly different than the way we did it yesterday. And I agree with Mike that just being an athlete, there's a lot of struggles going into an organization because, you know, I'm used to doing those things on my own. So now I've got to work with a group of people and be successful with others. Well, the way that information is being passed today and how fast this economy and this market and business and information moves today with the disposal of all of the tools that we have to get information that at our disposal, that we need to manage people in a much different way, in ways that motivate them rather than ways that, you know, we think motivate us. So when you connect your business with a cause or a purpose that's greater than the bottom line, and you connect the people to that cause rather than your business, you'll be surprised the results that companies are getting now by doing that.
That's perfect. We got to wrap up a little bit here, but I'd like to just get maybe some closing ideas from everybody if we have time. Ira, I know you were talking to me about an experience that you had coaching your 7-year-old son Eric, I think, in Illinois. Was
yeah,
it?
Yeah. I was with the Great Sarah Lee Corporation for a number of years, and you know, when I moved away from college coaching and into business, I still stayed Coach B for the rest of my life, and that's a forever title. That, by the way, that's the greatest title in the world, is coach. Yeah. Even now, I'll get a 28-year-old, a 29-year-old, yeah, I'll bump into him in Kroger, yep, or something, mm, and they're 6'9", and they, yeah, and I'm losing an inch a year, and they're saying Coach B, Coach B.
Yeah,
and something about that that's,
yeah,
like a, you know. It's like the doctor. You never lose that title. Yeah, yeah, this, you know, and two things. Number one, very quickly, in terms of your last question, I would have had more trouble transitioning into business from being an athlete, but I didn't have that experience because I transitioned from being a coach to a business guy, and I didn't find the transition difficult at all, because whether it be coaching a team or coaching an organization, it might have been a little different, you know, because as an athlete, it is about you sometimes, you know, and didn't they see me make that big score?
Right.
But let me give you the example, okay? And this is a great business story, and the best stories I have are the ones I've learned from my 5 kids and grandson, soon to be an athlete. He's 2 months old, so we're Mike, we need to talk.
There we go.
That's right.
Well, you know, you could do a letter of intent, right? No, you could do a verbal now.
Yeah. Before the high school.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm coaching my son, Eric. I'm living in Naperville, Illinois. Coach B is my name. 7-year-old basketball. And if any of your listeners have ever seen 7-year-old basketball, that's when you shoot the ball up in the air, comes back, hits you in the face. Big scores are 8-6, 8-foot baskets.
Yeah.
I've got a perfect record going at the YMCA. My team is 0-7. And if any of your listeners are not sports fans, I need to explain 0-7 is not that great.
Not good.
I'm coming home from my 7th game. I look at my dear sweet son, Eric, who, as I said, became a college basketball player many years later. And he's crying. And I say to him the words that coaches have said to players since the beginning of time. Don't cry. It's only a
game.
Okay. By the way, don't cry. It's only a game is an obligatory expression used by losing coaches. Winning coaches don't use
that's
that.
That's right.
And he says, Dad, I'm not crying because we lost. We lost 7 games in a row.
Uh-huh.
This is my first year playing basketball. My first year. And in 7 games, I haven't scored one shot. I want to know what it feels like. My heart started racing. Man, I taught the kids the box and one, the trap, out of bounds plays, fast break offense, fast break defense, okay.
All at 7 years old.
Yeah, but I didn't teach them the most. But the most important rule in basketball, the most important rule in sport, and ladies and gentlemen, listeners, the most important rule in your life and in business, you cannot score unless you shoot. Wayne Gretzky said, I miss 100% of the shots I never take. So I said to my son, Eric, I said, Dear Eric, honey, In seven games, you know, Dad forgot to tell you about this rule. You cannot score unless you shoot. You haven't taken one shot. Mm. He gets it. He gets it. I go out of town. I'm 0-7. Coach Paul, my assistant coach, takes over the team. All right? I don't go to game number 8. I'm in Orlando, Florida. I call my son up. I say, Eric, how'd we do? Dad, we won our first game, 10-8. And I scored all 10 points. Now I'm thinking, move over Michael Jordan. We're going to have Eric on our shirts. I want to be like Eric is our new song. Right. He'll be doing movies with Looney Tunes characters. But now all of a sudden the ego steps in. Coach B is thinking, wait a minute now. These kids lose 7 games straight. while I'm in town, I leave, they win. I say, Eric, what did Coach Paul do to fire up the team? And he said, oh, Dad, Coach Paul, my assistant coach, got the flu. Mom coached the team. So I walk on the court the next week, and the women are chanting, we want Kim, we want Kim.
Yeah,
but the message is simple. You learn it in sport. You can't score unless you shoot. And, oh, by the way, I don't care whether you're in sales, your management, HR, IT, logistics, distribution, purchasing, you can't score unless you shoot. And thank you for inviting me, by the way.
My pleasure. We're out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up. But I appreciate everybody coming. That was a great session. We really enjoyed having you guys. And hopefully we can have you guys back on in the future. It sounds like we could probably talk on for another.
Why do you have to have a show? Why don't you do a one-day workshop?
That's okay? Right.
People can pay you real money. It's enterprise. We learned that in sport, too. We got to have the money for uniforms. And you do this, and you have workshops and breakout sessions, and we all drive Cornishes.
All right. We'll do that. We'll get it on the agenda.
By the way, we do have a remote set up.
That's right. We do. We'll do it from the gymnasium.
Up anywhere you want.
All right. Well, thanks again, guys. We appreciate it. And to our listeners, thank you for your time. We appreciate it as well. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.